Any last orders?
If the Borg should attack, don't wait for me or anyone else to return to the ship, but take the Enterprise to the transwarp conduit. Return to Federation space.
Got it. Good luck, Jean-Luc.
Good luck, Captain.
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, pouring kerosene on my green candle.
Is that a euphemism?
Get your mind out of the gutter there, Cameron. I don't know what you're talking about.
And we're here this week to talk about the journey of Beverly Crusher. We did an episode fairly recently on Worf. We've tackled Gul Dukat in the past. This is a fascinating character to tackle, Tyler. What makes Beverly Crusher so compelling in that regard?
There's a couple factors. Obviously, there's kind of the charisma of, say, one Gates McFadden. You need that for any character that's really going to, touch viewers in a certain way. But also, she's just such a utilitarian character as well. She has a lot more agency than I think a lot of the women characters have had in Star Trek up until, I think, this new era. And I think that's why she really struck a chord with many folks. I think back to this convention that you and I were at a couple years ago, Star Trek convention, of course, not the usual Harry Potter convention that you keep inviting me to, Cam.
Oh, I was going to say Supernatural.
Okay, yes. Your Vampire Diaries panel, how did it go recently?
Well, I mean, I got to meet Paul Wesley. The hell with meeting him at a Star Trek con.
Yeah.
That's where it's at, Vampire Diaries.
But at a Star Trek convention we were at, they had this great doctors panel. We had, Gates McFadden. We had, all the doctors you could think of that were still with us, right?
And yeah, I was going to say, not the ones that aren't with us.
Yeah. But it was just great. Her talking about how many folks, like young women, would come up to her just over the decades and say, like, you know what, you are a big inspiration for me getting into the sciences or pursuing a career in medicine. And I think John Billingsley kind of stole the show, and he's like, yeah, a lot of people told me that Phlox inspired them to become a doctor. You know, but it's true, you know, like she really has been an inspiring character for a lot of people. And I think, she's also like a mother dealing with a unique teenager. She's got a very interesting relationship with the star of the show, you know, one Jean-Luc Picard. She's friends, she's besties with a fan favorite, Deanna Troi. She is kind of a, not necessarily the hub that touches all the spokes in a wheel, but she's pretty close to it. It's a very interesting, compelling character that we have here. What is it about Dr. Beverly Crusher that I think, or you think, kind of strikes a chord with audiences?
Well, one thing I think that really clicks with me with Beverly Crusher is that oftentimes it almost feels like the Next Generation TV show is almost working against the success of that character.
Oh, yeah.
Because, there's not a lot of episodes that really, really center on her in a big way. And some of the ones we'll talk about today aren't necessarily home runs in that regard. She disappears in season two completely. The movies aren't particularly kind to her. And yet, why is it we find this character so interesting? I think, Gates McFadden is obviously a huge part of that. But I think there is just the nature that this character is probably the most moral character on the show and the one who speaks the most about her own morals. So when you have a key episode, whether it's, I, Borg, for example, she's the character who will go up against Captain Picard about infecting Hugh and sending him back to the collective. I mean, Deanna Troi will at times kind of push back against Picard, but not like Beverly. And Beverly is the one you can tell that Picard holds in the highest regard. And because he's our star and, Picard is often like the superhero of the Star Trek universe, we have that much more reverence for Beverly because of his respect for her.
I think maybe the only one that would rival her there would be Guinan, you know, which I think is kind of revelatory in kind of how much esteem Picard has for that relationship with Beverly as well. And by esteem, I mean steaminess in The Naked Now.
But the thing about Guinan is it's played by Whoopi Goldberg, who is a movie star. I mean, she was like an Oscar winner when she joins Next Generation. And so it's like, it's not hard to buy Patrick Stewart kind of bowing down at this icon of Hollywood. Whereas, you know, Beverly Crusher is played by Gates McFadden, who audiences aren't super familiar with when the show starts. She's very much on a similar plateau as her other co-stars in terms of kind of fame level. So much more is done through just the character versus kind of the stature of the performer.
All right. Well, Cam, I dug this up out of Memory Alpha. It was the original casting call for the character.
Yeah.
Describes Beverly Crusher as Leslie's 35-year-old mother. Leslie was the original name of Wesley. And says that Beverly Crusher serves as the chief medical officer on the Enterprise. If it were not for her intelligence, personality, beauty, and the fact that she has a natural walk of a striptease queen.
Stop describing me, Tyler.
Captain Picard might not have agreed to her request that Leslie observe bridge activities, therefore letting her daughter's intelligence carry events further. Cam, the 80s was a different time in which... You're trying to hire Gates McFadden to deliver the natural walk of a striptease queen, and she is the chief medical officer. That's Hollywood, I guess.
Well, all you champions of the Roddenberry vision, there it is right there.
Yeah, you know, I've always told you that you do walk like Beverly Crusher, Cam, so...
I mean, it's what I'm famous for, really. People stop me at Star Trek conventions all the time and are like, you are Gates McFadden's walking twin.
Why don't we kick it off kind of where things start in TNG, where we find ourselves introduced to the character on Farpoint Station, and they are setting things up. There is definitely a past between Picard and Beverly. Let's be honest. Like, I think the show from the get-go is trying to hint that there would be this kind of ongoing tension between the two characters, both with regards to Picard's captaincy aboard the Stargazer, in which husband Jack Crusher perished. And they only for episode one, I think, they had some question marks about the parentage of Wesley and whether Picard perhaps was somehow involved there. Maybe I'm reading too much. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Cam, do you think I was reading too much into that maybe one moment? Or do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't know the exact moment you're talking about. I know more in terms of what they're trying to communicate overall with that relationship. What specific moment are you talking about?
They're on Farpoint, and Picard is being introduced to Wesley for the first time. And Wesley just gives a look to, Picard gives a look at Wesley and gives a look at Beverly, and he's uncomfortable, you know.
Right. Okay. I need to go back to Farpoint Station. I've only watched that episode, I think, twice because it's not exactly the most fun journey to go on. I should do a revisit, though, to all of season one TNG, just for my own amusement. But the thing with this episode, I think, is interesting is, like, you're right. They're setting up a lot of tensions, some romantic tension between the two. Obviously, just the conflict about, you know, that Picard was the captain of the Stargazer when Jack Crusher died, the Wesley parent issue. They're putting a lot of kind of balls spinning in the air for potential story avenues to go down the future with that character. What's really interesting to me is that this is an episode that's coming out in 1987 and kicking off, you know, this ongoing show. A different show of that era, we would obsess over the relationship between those two characters for many seasons to come. And I actually give TNG points for not kind of obsessing over it and exploiting it needlessly for drama. Because, I mean, there's a lot of shows like Moonlighting, for example. You know, it's all about the will they, won't they. X-Files did that for a long time as well. You know, these are great shows, but like they really would focus in on those relationship dynamics. And TNG... later down the road, you get an episode like Attached, but it's not like every single time we check in with Picard and Crusher, they're like kind of, you know, the scores kicking in or they're giving each other the eyes. They're really kind of playing it very aloof.
I thought it was weird, and I thought it did a disservice to both Beverly and Picard that nothing really ever came of it, you know, unless you want to flash forward more than 30 years after Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah.
You know? It was just, the thing is, it was something that all the audiences kind of, they could sense the tension. It worked, you know? Why not go for it? You know, look, you wrap things up in All Good Things. We'll get to all these episodes, but like, yeah. Then you hop over to the movie era. You know, I guess they didn't want to confuse, like, broader audiences, but, like, I don't think people would have been confused if they see, like, Picard and Beverly in a relationship, you know? Maybe we'd not have been blessed with Inej and the Hummingbird in Insurrection.
Audience favorites.
Yeah, but I don't know. It just seems as if they did a disservice to the characters by setting things up. And the thing is, they had natural chemistry, and it doesn't have to be like hot and heavy, you know, the naked now sort of stuff, you know, episode to episode, but there is chemistry between them. And I think that's another reason why, you know, Beverly just struck a chord, is because there's just this natural chemistry with the lead of the show here. Cam, in season one, beyond Encounter at Farpoint, what were her most memorable moments, you know? I'm other than like the, you know, sweatiness and the naked now, I'm kind of blanking in terms of, you know, where she really jumped out in season one. And you can kind of understand why, you know, she's not coming back for the second season.
Like, she gets to play a pretty significant role in The Big Goodbye, you know, the big holodeck episode with Dixon Hill. And she's, I think, the person that recognizes the worm creatures and conspiracy. But these are like small little additions. They're not character driven stories. I do wonder, though, in terms of them kind of dropping the whole romantic tensions between Beverly and Picard, I wonder how much of that has to do with the fact that season two, she's not around, and it kind of disrupts that flow because you have such a big creative turnover that kicks in with season three when she returns, that I do wonder, season two is kind of a weirdo season as well, that I wonder if the same writers had been writing Beverly Crusher through season two, if we would have seen a little more of that romantic sparks kicking in.
Yeah, it's just so tough because it was this weird era of television in which, you know, you're trying to get 100 episodes to get it syndicated and reruns, and like, isn't it weird if, you know, there's this ongoing relationship, but what if you drop a season one episode into the middle of like the season four run or something like that? Do you remember how it worked? Like, there'd be like, I hope I'm not confusing you or our listeners, even though I do that all the time. But, you know, if you're on one channel and they are running all the episodes of Seinfeld in order from like season three onward, mm-hmm. and then it airs at a different time on a different channel in syndication, and they're running them all in order from like, say, season one onward. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, do you remember like this kind of phenomenon like going on?
I mean, so much of the syndication era to me was just like a complete grab bag of randomly discovering whatever episode was going to be on at any given time.
Yeah.
And I remember actually appreciating it when they did run them in sequence, but a lot of the time they didn't.
Yeah, so that's why it's kind of like, I can understand why they were a little reluctant to have this as kind of a serialized romance. But I think, you know, I think they could have made some sort of exceptions. You know, by the time we roll around to the final season of Star Trek The Next Generation, at the very least, which we do touch upon towards the very end of season seven. But Cam, Crusher, she's off. Running Starfleet Medical, season two. Obviously, yep. Behind the scenes, Gates McFadden was not getting along all that great with showrunner, head writer Maurice Hurley. He departs after that second season. And from what it says on Memory Alpha, Patrick Stewart had played an integral role in getting Gates McFadden to return back to the show. I think TNG would have been a very different animal without her presence moving forward, with only having her and Yar there for like one season. Like, mm-hmm. could you imagine like Dr. Crusher kind of being, you know, like Yar is not quite part of the same family the way that Crusher is. And like, it would have been weird having Crusher in kind of that Yar tier.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, Gates McFadden leaving and Denise Crosby leaving keeps Deanna Troi, that character, on the show. So then you get to at least have Gates McFadden back in season three, and you have both her and Deanna Troi there for the long haul. So I guess things work out really well in the long run. No offense to Denise Crosby, who is obviously great in her appearances going forward, but like, it could have been worse.
Let me ask you this. Isn't it kind of weird that Dr. Crusher, she ascends to chief medical, or heading up Starfleet Medical? She figures she's just going to leave her son aboard a starship that she knows is being attacked, faces like phaser fire, photon torpedoes, you know, every single week. Like that's kind of a weird decision for her to just leave Wesley aboard the ship.
Well, I feel like a lot of the parenting stuff on TNG doesn't particularly work. And I think part of it is because, as I said up front, Beverly has not a ton of episodes over the course of the seven seasons of TNG that focus on her. And so all of those, you know, appearances throughout the run, how many are actually focusing on writing compelling parenting stories? It is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the show. And so you check in for these odd little moments between her and Wesley, but they kind of don't add up to anything. And then, yes, she heads off to run Starfleet Medical in season two, and you're just like, well, I guess Wesley's on the show. But this show, which has no time for parenting stories really at all, has even less time to explain Wesley's kind of upbringing situation in season two.
I think that she seemed to be more of a parent every time Wesley came back to visit the Enterprise from season four onwards, or, mm-hmm. you know, where Journey's End, she's kind of, she knows that Wesley's struggling at the Academy. She senses that. She's trying to, you know, work through that with him, and Wesley's not having any of that. That's much more parenting that we got in that one episode than I think we got in, like, some seasons, you know? I guess, okay, look, she returns, season three, episode one, Evolution, and I do remember moments there in which she is like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm back with Wesley, we're living together again and all that, you know, but it wasn't, like, a big parenting-centric episode.
Well, it doesn't make any sense with the conception of the show initially, where, like, Wesley is this, like, hero kid who saves the ship all the time. And so what are you going to do? You're going to have scenes of Wesley solving all the problems and then cut to, like, Beverly, like, disciplining him in the quarters? Yeah. Like, that doesn't make any sense just in terms of, like, telling a story on television.
You're in timeout.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like he just saved the Enterprise. Like, what are you doing? It's almost like the way they write Wesley takes away from Crusher because it removes kind of that parenting storyline in some ways. And then Wesley just turns into this character that's kind of this very individual, almost like self-raising genius.
So you mentioned something not too long ago that I think is very important here. In another season three episode that I think is very important, The Enemy. Mm-hmm. And that's the one in which we have Worf kind of deciding whether or not he would kind of give up, what was it, like some sort of chromosomes or whatever to help this Romulan agent, you know, survive this medical distress. And yeah. Crusher's like, okay, Worf, well, we just need to get you to do this. And he's like, no. And she cannot wrap her head around that. You know, just mm-hmm. kind of, you were talking about her just kind of being this voice of morality for the ship there. And it was just interesting for her. There's no question. She's just like, oh yeah, Worf, just let's get you to do this. Like she could not fathom why somebody would be so utterly traumatized by what happened in his youth that, you know, this could not be something that Worf would ever contemplate.
Yeah, and one thing that's noted on the show but never really explored is that Beverly lost her parents at a very young age. And so, like, how much of that is, like, a drive to become a healer? And when you have a situation like this where a life could be saved, she doesn't... It's not just because she's a doctor, I think. It's also just psychologically built into the character that she just can't wrap her head around why someone would refuse to do such a thing. And I think if this show were made now, we would spend a lot more time exploring kind of the psychology of Crusher. But I think it's like elements like this that make these stories that much more interesting, because there's definitely elements kind of almost below the surface with Beverly. But yes, it's like the morality is often the aspect that's presented front and center in these arguments.
This would only be pure headcanon on our part. I don't think it is anything, you know, intentional on part of the writers, but I do wonder how much the loss of her parents at a young age influenced her own parenting style, like kind of that aloofness. Like, I think you're right. Like, I think what it comes down to is, like, was he supposed to be saving the ship every week? And then you have his mom, you know, sending him to his room early for, you know, staying out too late with the Dauphin, you know, like... It's kind of like that's the practical reason why she's a little bit more aloof with her parenting. But I think we could headcanon it and think like, well, she doesn't necessarily have kind of the direct kind of role models to like role model what, you know, what would we perceive to be just regular parenting skills.
Yeah, I mean, she was raised by Grandma Howard, who was at least busy with Ronan some of the time.
Horny Grandma Howard, yeah. Her nickname right. In the playground. Yeah.
That's right.
So, yeah, but I know. Are there other season three episodes that really stand out? I know we have the high ground in which she's abducted by the terrorists. It's not a very good episode. I guess she has her moments in this, you know, there's got like the child soldier and she's like, no, do not attack. It's like, okay. I don't know. Like to me, she's great in what she's given, but she wasn't given a whole lot throughout the series, not just an episode like The High Ground.
No, I mean, what it shows us is that she is a doctor first and foremost and will help people because The High Ground has this whole Civil War situation, but she is more than willing to help anyone who needs it. So it's like it kind of presents the moral world of Beverly, but yes, you're right. The High Ground, when you look at season three TNG, doesn't tend to rank in the top, I don't know, maybe 20 episodes of the season.
I think the episode was also banned in like the United Kingdom.
Oh, yeah. Was it for violence?
No, I think it was because of like allusions to the troubles going on.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah.
Maybe I don't think they wanted to stoke any Irish, sentiment or anything like that.
Right. So. Right. Okay.
Despite the fact that Star Trek is such a big fan of the Irish, I don't think the High Ground was that translatable.
Thank God they didn't have characters like Up the Long Ladder at the heart of this story.
Yeah. The only other episode from season three I'll point out is, again, not a very good one, but Transfigurations. It's that guy where like he's got like healing powers. He's got like no memory of what's going on. Crusher's dealing with him. To me, it wasn't a very good episode. It was just quite forgettable.
Well, you talked about her being a very utilitarian character. That is so often just a function of this character on the show. It's like, we have a problem. Beverly Crusher's either going to work on it or work with the alien of the week on whatever the health crisis might be or the virus or whatever. And it doesn't lead to as much character exploration as, for example, Data, who's being given episode after episode of diving into how that character works.
But, that brings up a good point. I don't remember the specific episode. It may have been Data's Day. She has her moments throughout all these episodes in which she say she's teaching Data how to tap dance, And I think that's actually an interesting exploration of her character. And like we are finding out her interests. Remember, she was the one kind of directing the play. And what was the play that Riker got stuck in?
Oh, God.
I know it's you always flub the title of it, but
I do. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it Frame of Mind?
Yes, Frame of Mind.
Okay. I didn't flub it that time.
You always call it Frame of the Mind. That's all.
Okay. Yeah.
There you go. Calling you out, sir. Calling you out. Yeah. So it's kind of those little things, with her. And like we understand that, much like Gates McFadden, she has a love for the arts, the performance arts.
Well, this is where you start to see also the actor informing the character. Because, yes, like Gates McFadden obviously is very passionate about the theater and talks about the theater program she has going to this day. And you see that, she is like overseeing plays on the Enterprise. She is teaching Data to dance. And these are all her specialties. And so it's a little bit like the Riker trombone thing, which Jonathan Frakes, of course, played the trombone. But it makes the character that much richer just because the performer has clearly an interesting life outside of the show.
Yeah, I heard, Patrick Stewart reads books. And so they integrated that into Picard's character.
They were like, Patrick Stewart is so boring. This man's interests are reading books, and that is all.
So jumping into season four, I think, look, you talk about the utilitarian character aspect of that, and, Best of Both Worlds, part two. We've said it before, I think people, overrate the second part based on how great the first part is, but she plays a very utilitarian role in kind of solving the problem with the whole, sleep command that Jean-Luc, I guess at that point Locutus was giving as kind of a hint to the crew. And so she's very utilitarian in solving the problem, even though she didn't necessarily have to be the one in charge of that deflector dish sort of like blasty moments that destroyed the cube ultimately.
What's interesting too about Beverly is that while she isn't given as many episodes as some of the other co-stars on the show, TNG introduces a lot of problems that really hinge on her abilities. And so when you start to like rack up her accomplishments over the course of TNG, you know, you have like, yes, her recovering Picard from like a Borg infection. That's not something we'd seen before. And so like Beverly, when you start to compare like her accomplishments to say, I don't know, Bashir on DS9, think of all the huge DS9 story arcs. How many of them hinge on Bashir solving the problem at the end of the day? Very few. Whereas Beverly, it's a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. I just think that we were denied those moments of her applying polysporin onto Picard's former implants, you know. But,
that's Ogawa, right?
Well, you know, that's a very good point, yeah. Or Dr. Sarek. Or no, it wasn't Dr. Sarek. What was the name of the... How do you have, like, two doctors on one ship serving, like, 1,000 people? That considering, like, the doctor shortage that we have right now in British Columbia, that's a pretty good deal that you got there on the Enterprise. But it was some Vulcan doctor. I'm blanking on the doctor's name, but, yeah. It's probably Dernis Ogawa.
Yeah, I would have to say so, yes.
Okay. Cam, my favorite Dr. Crusher episode of all time, also in Season 4, Remember Me. You know, we've got the Return of the Traveler. We've got her own little... pocket universe shrinking and shrinking as more people kind of disappear in this existence for her until it's just her and Picard. And again, we were complaining about it a few moments ago, but like, why not pursue things more with her and Picard? Because by the time you get to the episode, it's just Jean-Luc saying in her own little universe, hey, it's just you and me. We never needed anybody else. You know, we can just give commands to the computer. And we have the whole universe to ourselves to fly this starship. And I was just like, yeah, I get it, you know. So, I don't know. And to me, it's also her doing a lot of problem solving. I think this is a really tight kind of high concept sci-fi story. And they center Beverly around it, which I think is just fantastic.
Well, I've said this about Patrick Stewart on Star Trek, and I'll say it about Gates McFadden as well. I don't know that they could play stupid. Like, there's something about Gates McFadden, when she's on screen, she seems so intelligent in the way she conducts herself. And so when you have an episode like this, this is a classic high concept Star Trek episode. There's lots like it, you know, Conundrum, for example. But the thing about this one is so much of it is Beverly driven problem solving. And when we watch her solve problems, it feels like she's raising the game of the episode. You know, you look at like Parallels, another great high concept episode. Worf is not the problem solver that Beverly is.
Photon torpedoes.
When I'm watching Remember Me, which I agree is like probably her best episode of the series, but like I buy into the solutions way more so because she's the one delivering them, because it seems like this character would be right. And the only thing that I find a little frustrating is that the Traveler comes in as this deus ex machina, because I'd like Beverly to ultimately be the sole solution of the problem as opposed to the Traveler lending a very, you know, helpful hand.
Yeah. Jumping forward a little bit, she had her goodbye to Wesley in Final Mission. I just, going forward, like, from, like, the 9th episode of Season 4 onwards, like, how much did she miss her son? Like, that's kind of... Like,
yeah,
we didn't really get that sense from her. You know, she was happy to leave him alone for an entire season, and she was happy to go see him off to Academy. And I guess I get it. You know, parents eventually have to say goodbye to their children. But my parents, they're always like asking all of us kids, like, oh, come visit, please visit us. You know, like I don't know. I think she and Wesley always had okay. We'll get into it in a little bit, Cam, but do you think she's making up for lost years with Jack Crusher, like her relationship with her new son versus her first son?
Uh-huh. Yes, yeah. I do. And, I mean, I don't know. Like, I know a number of parents, you know, in my life, and I don't know many that if they had a child who was leaving to go away to university, which is basically what Wesley's doing here, would be like, well, see you later. You go off with the captain. It's like, yeah. No, they would be going, like, it would be Beverly... with Wesley traveling to Starfleet Academy, not like, well, Picard, you know, you hated Wesley for a couple years there, but you take him off to school.
You know, it's just, it's always fascinating when we talk about like parenting skills among our favorite Star Trek characters. You know, like we talked about it with Worf. He's not a good dad. You know, I think the one parent that like was actually portrayed as like a good parent has to be like Ben Sisko, like as part of the core of their identity, you know. And there may have been some parents that were fine parents, but it wasn't part of the core of their identity. Like I think about something like Miles. Like he seemed like a fine parent, but what did that define that character throughout the run of Deep Space Nine? Not necessarily, but I think it did define Ben throughout the run of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, that is a like specific part of his character arc, whereas yeah, with O'Brien, not so much. It's more about his relationship with Keiko really than them having kids.
Yeah. Are there any other season 4 episodes that kind of jumped out to you as kind of really informing kind of the journey of Dr. Crusher?
Well, there is one, The Host, where she has the romance with the Trail Ambassador. And, you know, we had early on that setup of a romance between her and Picard, but we see Beverly here have a romance with a different character, and it's the first introduction of the Trill, and they look a little different in this episode, but, you know, the Trill is injured and has to be put in the body of Riker, and we have the continuation of the romance. And then ultimately that Trill winds up in a female host, and Crusher's not so down to party, if you will. And I think, like, this one kind of falls victim to what a lot of the episodes have, especially for our female stars on TNG, which is dead-end romances with kind of vacant 90s guys. And this one's not the most charismatic of actors. And I'm not talking about Jonathan Frakes. I'm talking about the initial Trill. But this one is an episode that, like, has a really interesting concept that I don't know that it's aged particularly well. But it's at least interesting to see the way that Beverly navigates a relationship, I suppose.
How do you think it would have been portrayed, this episode, had it been produced now? Because I think, like, you watch this episode now, and then her reaction to the host now being a woman for the symbiont, and it's like, Beverly, that's not super progressive of you, you know? Like, I just think about an episode, and I'm, it's such a, like, bad, like, very rough analog that I'm trying to draw here, but feel the kind of the spirit that I'm trying to tell here. But The Crying Game, in which, you know, the main character falls in love with a person and doesn't really understand all parts of that person's identity, you know? And by the end of it, like, the person, like, they've fallen in love with that person for who they are. And it kind of irks me when we get to an episode like The Host and Beverly just, it's so easy. I don't want to say easy, but she seems less conflicted about just cutting things off despite having been in love with that person.
Yeah, and had no issue when it was in the body of Riker, like, you know, right, a colleague, right? Yeah. And I think the thing about this is, like, look, every individual's...
I'd say there's a lot of women out there that have no problem if it was in the body of Riker. That's you know, I've heard from some friends of ours.
What if it was Argyle? A little different story, right? Like, it could change it up. But, like, the thing is, every person is different. So, like, maybe that would be too far for that character. Maybe that is something that she just wouldn't be comfortable with. That's entirely acceptable, whatever. Like, every individual has their own choices to make in life. But, like, the thing about it is, I think if this episode were written out and you had a similar outcome to where the episode was going, it would be much more of a sensitive conversation between Beverly and the Trill figure. Because I just think, like, this is being written in the early 90s, and it feels a little like, you said The Crying Game, it feels a little more insensitive than even what, like, The Crying Game is doing in the 90s.
I know, and I just, this episode would not have been written the same way now, you know?
No.
Like, so, I feel so dumb for having left this one off my list. I think this is, like, it's a very, very important episode, one of her most important romance episodes, but also just, like, viewing it, you know, 30 years on, and seeing how its age and how that kind of reflects on her character, and how it is, I always kind of roll my eyes when people say, like, well, it was of a time. I'm just like, okay, but we still have to kind of, like, accept what, like, how that informs that character, even if it is of that time.
Definitely, and also, you'll often stumble across stories in film and television from decades past where you go, man, they handled that really well. And it holds up really well.
Yeah, exactly.
I would not say that's the case with The Host. There are other Star Trek episodes that did tackle issues that were maybe a little ahead of their time for what was being told, you know, during their eras. But those episodes have maybe aged a little better. And yeah.
Yeah. Jumping forward to season 5. Look, this is not a Beverly-centric episode, but I really love the fact that we have an episode like Disaster And we have Beverly and Geordi stuck in the cargo bay. And it's essentially up to them to kind of save the ship, you know, at that point. And it's just fantastic because you don't often see those two kind of together, just one-on-one for an entire episode. And so it was kind of very revelatory for those two characters to get so much time and to once again see Beverly in this very utilitarian role.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I like how an episode like this, because it is so ensemble-driven, it needs to give everyone something to do. And there's, despite TNG being famous for its ensemble, we've talked about this on the show, there's not a lot that actually utilize every player in an interesting way in an episode, and this one is a great example.
Yeah. Just briefly touch on the game. You know, we have Wesley coming back, and it's, again, like, I wish there was more time for Crusher, well, for Beverly and Wesley to spend together. But look, if you've got like one Robin Leffler like hanging around showing interest in you, I don't blame Wesley for ditching his mom.
Nope, this is the most relatable thing Wesley's ever done.
Exactly. Cam, maybe jumping forward just a little bit further into this episode. Look, I think it's not my favorite TNG episode, Ethics. Worf comes off as kind of a jerk, but it is interesting how it's up to Beverly to kind of really kind of save the day and like essentially save both Worf's, I don't know if she's saving his honor, like I because Klingons would like feel very differently about like him getting this sort of procedure, but again, she's playing like I'm gonna do this sort of experimental procedure so that Worf can walk again. And it's just even moments at the end where he's going through physical therapy, you know, to regain his ability to walk. I don't know, it's just I think it really showcases why people like her so much as the chief medical officer on the Enterprise.
And also how initially Worf is going to be paralyzed, and to her, she's just like, well, he will be able to live a rich life and we can do everything we can to allow for that. Like, this isn't, you know, this isn't something that's life ending for him. And I like the way she kind of presents those arguments, and they feel like they are very positive. They could have been pandering in an episode written at this point in time as well. And they don't feel that way. And I like the conflict she has with the Toby Russell character, the Dr. Toby Russell, who's a little more of that renegade, like neuroscientist, and the way that that bumps up against the way that Beverly operates herself.
Yeah. Any other season 5 episodes before we jump over to the next season?
The only thing I noted was, and I mentioned it earlier, Iborg, where she's the one going up against Picard about infecting Hugh.
Yeah. Briefly in season 6, I'm more just eager to jump over to season 7, because I think this is actually her strongest season altogether, even though it's like a weaker TNG season. But in season 6, again, like her, the one episode that's really centered on her is Suspicions, and it's not a very strong episode, even though they're trying to give her something else to do, like make her kind of a detective when we have this Ferengi scientist that specializes in metaphasic shielding suddenly dies, you know, and it's just like, it's kind of a meh episode, but at least they're trying to give her something else to do rather than just like the medical crisis of the week.
Well, what I like about Beverly's episodes is, and we've talked about some weak ones along the road, but they're all quite different from one another. It doesn't feel like they're just like, well, there's only so many things we can do with that character. You know, like, look how many episodes featuring Deanna Troi feature her being like violated in some way. There's even one called Violations, right? And they feel a little repetitive, or they're tied to just romances over and over again. Whereas I feel like with Crusher, they at least all feel quite different from one another. Like, it's not hard for me to keep them straight in my mind. And so an episode like this, yeah, like, it's basically Beverly playing detective, trying to expose the truth as to what happened to a Ferengi colleague. And I think, like, this one, as you said, it's not a top-tier season 6 episode, but it at least is interesting and leads to some stuff that's going to pay off a little bit later, like the Ferengi technology that ultimately plays a factor in the season finale.
Cameron, you bring up a good point, though. Is a lot of the Deanna Troi episodes were kind of defined by her being victimized or violated, whereas not so with Crusher. Like, she has so much more agency as kind of the way to, and I bring up the comparison because there's really only two women out of a series of 7 regulars by the time we get to the end of the show, and I think that's they stand in contrast to each other in what the writers were interested in pursuing in terms of like centric episodes. And for me, Beverly never seemed to really lose agency in most cases, the way that, say, Deanna Troi did, which is, I mean, it's unfortunate for Troi, but it shows you how interested the writers were in pursuing those kind of, I have to be honest, just more interesting stories for Beverly.
Well, I mean, we're talking about season six right now. Season six is the Troi episode, Man of the People, which is maybe my least liked episode. I'll just say hated episode. It's my most hated episode, I think, of the entire run of the show. But Beverly is the one that ultimately saves the day. She's the one that, you know, exposes that villain, Vess Alcor, and saves Deanna. So, you know, even when she's utilitarian, she's popping up in a bad episode, a very, like, kind of almost like standard issue Deanna story, and saving the day.
The only thing I do want to bring up, though, else in season six is Chain of Command. You know, she, Worf, and Picard go on that secret mission for that Cardassian base or whatever. She and Worf make it back, but Golmadred, he uses kind of the threat of torturing Beverly, hanging over Picard's head to get Picard to stick around in part two. Madred's like, yeah, you can go home anytime you want. I guess we'll get the information out of that redheaded Dr. Crusher.
Yeah, and that, yeah, we see like that kind of Achilles heel that Picard might have that, again, not heavily exploited through the run of the show, but it has impact when it's brought up here.
Jumping forward to season seven, I really think season seven was her showcase series, or I should say season. And it kicks off very early on with Descent Part Two, in which she is in the captain's chair of a real skeleton crew. And it's just interesting for like us seeing her come into her own commanding things, as well as kind of these young kids that don't necessarily have the most bridge experience as well. So it's funny, it's such a data-centric episode, but like she has the most interesting, just from a character standpoint, stuff to do other than Data in this one.
Well, when you think about, I don't know how most people feel, but like when I think about Descent 1 and 2, what are the big takeaways of that two-parter? Obviously, it's kind of the resolution, at least for that time, for the lore story. But the other one is Crusher being captain on the Enterprise, because that was not something we'd seen before, and it feels like a very momentous event. And you have her, you know, basically hiding in the sun, using that Ferengi tech to shield them from like the sun's rays and dodging the Borg. Like, this is really compelling stuff you get to see her do as captain of the Enterprise. There's a lot of characters who get to captain, you know, the flagship ship on their shows, but a lot of it is kind of mundane stuff where you go like, oh yeah, sure. This is not the case with what Beverly gets to do.
Yeah, it's not like, what was the episode in which Troi pursues getting her own full three pips? And so they have Troi sitting in on night duty with Crusher, and for whatever reason, the lights are dim. They're like, yeah, we're just here to remind you that this is night duty, so we're going to dim the lights on everybody.
I think it's Thine Own Self. I think that's...
Yeah, Data is on that planet, and he loses his memory, and they call him Iceman.
That's right, yeah. And you see Crusher on night shift there. And again, like they could have had her do that first, and that would be noteworthy, but it's not as flashy as what she gets to do in Descent, which is her first, big chair moment.
Yeah. Okay. Jumping forward, I think an episode that you and I both really like, Attached, in which Picard and Beverly end up on that mission on that alien planet that's kind of have this ongoing civil war. And they're imprisoned, the two of them, and they make their escape. But if they kind of walk away from each other, they have this device in which they can kind of share each other's thoughts and feelings and emotions. And if they separate too much, then what happens? They get like really bad migraines or something like that. But it's just such an amazing character study in which we kind of explore how deep the emotions are for each other. And like it is like... It goes beyond just kind of like the platonic, we're really good at working together, we're also good friends. There's the sexual tension going on that they kind of have always been reluctant to address head on unless they're getting like a horny virus like they did in The Naked Now.
Well, season seven is in so many ways kind of like a house cleaning season where it's like, okay, we got to wrap some things up. Okay, we got to deal with Wesley. We got to deal with Ensign Ro. We got to deal with Alexander. Oh, and also that romantic spark with Picard and Beverly we've kind of ignored for a lot of the series. We also got to pay that off in some way. And so you get an episode like Attached, which is like one of the most like mature romance episodes in all of Star Trek. Because a lot of them are of the, you know, Deanna Troi variety, or worse in some ways. Sure. Like, some of them are just so cheeseball or whatever in the other shows. Whereas, like, this one is, like, two adults who have a lot of life experience talking about, like, their relationship with one another and what could happen in the future, what the past means to them. It's, in some ways, like, a perfect character episode. And we were saying, like, you know, Remember Me is probably the best Beverly Crusher episode. I only say that because that is an episode solely driven by her, but, like, my favorite episode where she plays, like, a primary role is probably Attached.
I can't believe, like, I'm blanking on potential moments from a season earlier, but in Lessons, you know, when we have Commander Neela Darren board the ship and starts that relationship with Jean-Luc, was there a moment where Beverly, like, commented on what was going on? Or, like, I feel as if there must have been a moment where Beverly is like, ah, Jean-Luc, pursuing something now, huh?
Okay. I'm also racking my brain because is it in Attached where they're, like, meeting for breakfast in the morning and talking about, like, their personal lives? Okay, that's in that episode, so that wasn't tied to an earlier event, like Lessons or something.
No, but I think they've had breakfast before, or tea or something like that. And I think that may have been in Lessons as well.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense because, like, Beverly is, like, Picard's confidant, which is something we didn't really say earlier. But, like, she is often the character he goes to. Troi handles more of kind of the, I guess, the psychological problems. But when it comes to, like, more personal problems, it's usually Beverly.
Okay. Cam, jumping forward a few more episodes. We don't care what the rest of the fandom says. Sub Rosa, one of the most entertaining episodes of Next Generation. It's the Madam Web of season 7 Next Generation.
Might have been more successful, though, than Madam Web. More people watched it.
I don't think we mentioned it on the podcast, but you and I went and saw Madam Web a couple weeks ago. And I would say Sub Rosa, far more entertaining than Madam Web. Madam Web is just, like, really boring. Like, it was, like, 2 hours long, and it didn't really resemble what's otherwise known as visual medium, film or television.
Well, I would say that one of the big differences, though, in Sub Rosa, Gates McFadden is never side-eyeing the audience going, can you believe I'm in this? Versus Dakota Johnson has a couple moments in Madam Web where you're like, oh, she knows. She knows.
You can see the thought bubble over Dakota Johnson's head where it's just like dollar symbols, just like she's cashing in a paycheck there. But you know what? Maybe Dr. Crusher would have been able to figure out that neuromuscular disorder that Dakota Johnson was having there.
Maybe Gates McFadden was just thinking, if I just star in this episode, they're going to let me direct Genesis. So just put up with it. Put up with it.
Sub Rosa, Cam, look, I mean, it's not Star Trek at its best. We have a lot of fun watching it, but it is like them. Okay, so Beverly recounting her grandmother's, her horny Grandma Howard's diaries to Troi, and then Troi being very interested in what was going on. I mean, it's funny, but it's making like Star Trek is always kind of very hands-off when it comes to sexual stuff, and it's making it explicit, like, yeah, no, let's touch the sexual stuff, like, head-on. But it's like, I just wish this episode was done much better in order for them not to, like, freak out, like, when you talk about sex in Star Trek amongst the characters so much, you know. This episode is a weird one. The reason I have trouble with this one is because she loses her agency in this one. She's under the influence of an alien. This seems more of, like, something that they would give Troi to do versus Dr. Crusher. And so, like, can I really say that this reveals much about her character? Like, I don't think so. Like, unless an alien, like, infects her brain, is she really going to, like, depart the Enterprise? Like, no?
Yeah. All it really reveals is just some stuff about, like, you know, her grandmother and ancestral Scotland or wherever they're living. Aspects of that, which are just kind of, like, interesting little nuggets for backstory. But a lot of this episode is driven by a very insipid romance, which TNG kind of specializes in.
Yeah. Jump forward to Genesis. You kind of alluded to it, like, Gates McFadden directs this episode. I will point out that it's really Dr. Crusher's fault that this disease emerges because of the, kind of, not cure, but whatever treatment that she gave Barclay that sparked kind of that genetic sort of de-evolution that was going on over the ship. I think that's a very important part. Like, she can screw up big time, and it ended up with the loss of the life of that helmsman who seems as if he got his spine ripped apart.
Nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. No, Journey's End, I kind of talked about it before. You know, we did have the Beverly stuff, where her trying to be the parent for Wesley. And ultimately, it's kind of sad when you think about, like, where... Like, this is kind of the end of, like, kind of her being a parent to Wesley here. He walks mm-hmm. off with a traveler by the end of it. Like, like, Dr. Crusher is very concerned about her son. She knows ultimately this is, you know, the best for him. But it is kind of a sad ending when we talk about kind of the parenting arc for Dr. Crusher, at least at this phase.
I would have really liked to have a scene where it was actually Beverly having any sort of real relationship with the traveler, because maybe it would have felt less weird if you had a real sense that she also was of shared minds with the traveler and understood, like, why this was necessary for Wesley. But they never really put those two characters together in a scene for a prolonged period of time.
Well, jumping off of that, Cam, I think we have to go to All Good Things, and we get to see Captain Beverly Picard of the USS Pasteur in, like, this alternate future, which I think it looked pretty badass. And again, they're alluding to the relationship between Picard and Beverly, in which we find out that they ended up getting married at one point and then got divorced, you know. But it was great to see her have agency. She's in the captain's chair once again. You know, is this the start of Commando Crusher, you know, her kicking ass, Cam, as she liked to say in the lead up to season 3 of Star Trek Picard?
I guess so. The thing with, like, the Pasteur alternate timeline is I really love that. And I don't like that it really didn't come to fruition in the prime timeline of the show. I'm like, I'm okay with them not getting married and then divorcing very quickly after. I'm like, that part, if they hadn't have kept that, that's fine. But I would have liked to have known that the Pasteur element was something that continued into Beverly's journey, but seems not to have been the case, yeah. But I do like seeing it here.
The only problem is this is the last fantastic showcase for Beverly for about 30 years. And
it's true. It's so true.
I know. Then we got to get into movie era. Cam, what was the most memorable thing or moment that happened to her in Star Trek Generations?
Well, I feel like this is a pop quiz. I like this. Okay, being pushed off a boat by Data.
Yes. What was the most memorable thing or moment for her in Star Trek First Contact?
Thwarting the Borg with the holographic doctor program.
Correct. What was the most memorable moment or thing that happened to her in Star Trek Insurrection?
Talking to Deanna Troi about her breasts firming up or something. That and also wielding a phaser rifle. Those two things.
I think it's the boob talk that is probably the most most referenced among fandom. Cam.
Yes.
Please tell me the answer, because I don't know the answer for Nemesis.
Okay. Well, she was sitting at the wedding with people. I think there was something maybe that she was involved in terms of determining that Shin Zan was Picard's son. Or not son, sorry, clone, I should say.
We have a character who's a very accomplished doctor, and we have a plot involving a clone with some sort of degenerative disease, and she just doesn't really do much utilitarian in this one. It seems like kind of a lost opportunity, and I don't know, just the movie era did Dr. Crusher wrong. It really is kind of a disgrace.
Very wrong, and I don't think this would happen now. I think this is very much representative of the late 90s, early 2000s era, where they are translating a TV show to the big screen, pick a handful of characters, give them big roles, and then everyone else gets kind of table scraps to fight over. I mean, we saw a very similar thing to maybe a less offensive degree in Serenity, the Firefly film as well, where it's like characters who were really interesting movers and shakers on the show suddenly became like very small supporting characters.
Yeah, you know, I mean, at least with Serenity, everybody got like a moment or two, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just Beverly did not really get a moment or two throughout this film franchise, you know? It angers me.
Because of those four, like, what's the best Crusher moment of the movie era? Like, there's ones we laugh at.
Well, I know, but it's her getting pushed into the sea by Data.
Like, that's a moment we, like chuckle at. It's not a great character-driven moment.
Same with, you know, boobs firming up, you know?
Yeah.
But that's actually a Data laugh. It's not like you laugh at her and Crusher talking about like their bodies, you know. It's
no.
I don't know. I do recall Gates McFadden was not impressed that some of her screen time was being taken up by the EMH as well, you know? It just...
That might be her best moment, though, as a character, where it shows, like, her calm and courage under fire and outsmarting the Borg in that situation. Like, maybe that speaks the best to her character of the four.
And also, like, I know this is more of a blasty-blasty kind of Star Trek adventure. I'm talking about First Contact here. You'd think you'd be able to find, like, something for Dr. Crusher to do in what she's trying to fight off the Borg through her medical expertise or something. Versus, let's unleash radioactive flesh-eating coolant onto the hive that's been built up in engineering.
I mean, yeah. And then when you get to Insurrection, it's like... The whole thing is driven by a romance between Picard and Inej, which you referenced earlier. And it's like, well, what role does Crusher have in that movie?
Well, wouldn't she have something to say about people's cells getting younger or like the medical impacts that this Fountain of Youth planet is having on everyone? You know, it's just so weird.
You're right, actually. And just the entire situation of relocating people to, you know, basically hand this technology over to the Sona, like, wouldn't Beverly have a moral interest in this, like something she would like to express? And I just wonder if this is like a, you know, average moviegoers won't understand who this character is, so who cares?
Yeah. Cam, I want to flash forward to not Picard season 3, but the lead up to Picard season 2, in which Gates McFadden was doing like the press circuit. She's like, I was never asked to be in Star Trek Picard season 2. The whole time I was seeing those quotes, I was looking at the exact wording, and she kept saying Picard season 2, and that was really telegraphing to me that she would be in season 3, because at that point, like, those seasons were being filmed back to back. That was known at the time as well, so that convinced me that she would be brought back. And then in the lead up to that, you know, Terry Metalis, the showrunner, said that she'd be playing an integral role in the season. Part of what's going on with the season, it would have been kicked off by her. And I was like, fascinated by this. And then we get more press tour quotes, you know, from Gates McFadden saying like, Dr. Crusher's here to kick some ass. And I was getting a little fearful about what this season would turn out to be for Dr. Crusher. Commando Crusher, I don't like her as much as Dr. Beverly Crusher, but honestly, they gave her so much better material here. Like, than I ever expected, you know, in terms of her coming to grips with her relationship with Jean-Luc, which is something I think we always really wanted. Her having a relationship, a very close, tight relationship with her own son, Jack Crusher. Still very weird that she named her son after her dead husband. Strange.
Yep.
You know, but I don't know. They're, you know, you and I are kind of more in the minority in terms of our reaction to Picard season 3. We thought it was solid, but we weren't as elated by it as some folks were. But I think they did Dr. Crusher right. There's quibbles I could make about this season, but I think they really, really gave her an amazing showcase across, you know, these 10 episodes.
It might be, it probably is, the best run of a Star Trek series, whether that be a series of movies or an ongoing TV series, to actually give Beverly Crusher her due. Because she may not factor super heavily into every episode of season 3, but she is a thread through the entire season. And when you have her talking to Picard about their relationship and why it didn't work, it almost feels like the Before Midnight of TNG. And to me, like, it's that kind of story that's really compelling. And just having such a sense of Beverly's internal life as well as her professional life on season 3 Picard, it's just the kind of storytelling that you go, why did this not exist many years ago? It just feels like it's so overdue, but it was very welcome when it actually arrived.
Cam, please tell me that this means that season 4 of Star Trek Picard is going to be the Before Sunset of their relationship. They can just
it's going to go backwards to a happier time?
Yeah. Just walking around, you know.
Yeah, that would be nice, actually.
What city were they walking around in that one? Paris was Before Midnight, right? Or is
that no? Paris is before sunrise.
Before sunrise. Okay.
Yeah, and then before sunset was it Italy? Might have been Italy.
Was it? Okay.
I don't remember.
Well,
I may be folks, wrong about that. Don't quote me on that.
Folks, we're talking about the Richard Linklater series of films, among my favorite.
Yeah, yeah. And Before Midnight, boy, was that Greece? I can't remember. Maybe I'm just mixing it up now with the Trip movies. I can't remember.
They're getting confusing. They're getting the Trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, Picard and Beverly, who are their analogs in the Trip?
They were doing a lot of like Michael Caine impressions. Beverly and Picard, they love them.
I was gonna say. Okay. I don't know. There are moments though, like I think worth zooming in on. You know, with her talking about why her life of Jack, like the life of Jack Crusher, is so precious to her because she knows what it was like to have a son that he's lost, that she lost to the stars, as she said in this season. So you can kind of understand why she's so protective. But there's just stuff that that really sparked debate about, like, whether or not she should have told Jean-Luc that she was pregnant as well. You know, I can understand her reasoning. Like, he had never really expressed interest in having kids, and that, you know, his life was always in danger. So would that mean that her son's life is always in danger? The only argument I'd say is, like, well, I mean, you left Wesley on the Enterprise. You left Wesley on the Enterprise for one full season on his own. Like, and yeah. I'm sure you can adjust your rationale, you know, over the years, or your own, look back at your own parenting and rethink that. But I don't know. It is also kind of one of those debates that fans are still having about whether she should or should not have told Picard that she was pregnant.
Well, what's really fantastically well written about that is, and you said it, like, the debate can go back and forth whether she should or shouldn't have, but we understand her reasoning. So from a character-centric point of view, you understand why Beverly made the decision she did. Whereas in the past, on some lesser written Star Trek stories, the debate exists because people don't really understand the reasoning of the character.
Yeah, that's why people always think it's kind of funny when, like, an actor's like, what's my motivation? I think it's actually one of the most integral things in part of storytelling, though, is the writer has to figure out what the motivation is of all the characters, whether they're an antagonist, a minor character, or the lead. Because if you don't know what a character wants, then you can't really empathize with them or put yourself in their shoes. And in this situation, you can debate, you know, whether she is right or wrong. You understand where she's coming from. And that's, you know, that's part of good storytelling right there.
And you also understand why Picard is mad.
Yeah.
And whether he has a right to be mad or not, you understand specifically why Jean-Luc Picard is annoyed.
Do you think it's kind of weird that, you know, she ghosts everybody and everybody's kind of cool with it after about, like, 8 hours of, you know, being reunited with her old crew?
I was just very complimentary to the reasoning that Beverly has for cutting things off with Picard and not telling him about Jack. I'm not as kind to this decision.
Yeah.
Where it feels like not really something that you would expect of Beverly, although she did disappear in season two and seemed to have no contact with anyone. So maybe it's actually baked into the character. Maybe that's Beverly's thing, is ghosting people.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I never thought about it that way. Okay.
Yeah, but maybe that is a Beverly thing. But the fact that there's not a larger conversation about that, like, there's not a moment, you know, we see her friendship with Troy throughout TNG. Like, why not just a scene of her and Troy talking about this or something? It would have, I think, added to the overall decision.
It was so weird. They're suddenly sitting next to each other in the observation lounge of the Titan, and Troy and Beverly were just, like, jolly old friends again. I was just like, really? You know, like, I agree with you. There should have been a scene with some sort of acknowledgement. You know, I'm sure Worf was cool with it, you know, but I don't know. it was weird. It was very weird.
Yeah, like, okay, let's go through this. Worf would have been fine with it. Data, I mean, he's going to be fine.
Yeah. Data was dead. Like, yeah, what Data was supposed dead. To do? Like,
he had Data, other problems.
I've been visiting the wreckage of the Scimitar every year to honor your death. You know.
He's like, sure, I guess.
Yeah, whatever.
We can understand, obviously, Picard's conflict. What about the other characters? Do you think? Okay. How do you think Riker felt about it?
Well, I think, like, Riker and Troy would not have been cool with it because they would have considered Crusher to be a very close friend, and they were dealing with the loss of their own child. And mm-hmm. She wasn't there for them. to help him through this as well. And I think that must remember, this is such a terrible story, but like, I think it was like, apologies if I get it wrong, but I think it was Led Zeppelin where like, one of their sons, one of the players' sons died at a very young age and not all of the guys in the band went to the funeral. And I was like,
oh, okay.
Oh, wow. That's pretty bad, you know, but, so I don't know. Like, I don't think they would have been cool with that. And not just for the loss of their son, but it's just like a loss of their friend without explanation, you know? And, Jordy, I don't know. Cause Jordy's such a weird dude, you know? Jordy may not have even realized that, she hadn't returned texts in a while, you know? He may have been too busy with his own, new duties as an Commodore, raising, two well-adjusted children. You know, I think Jordy would have been kind of okay with it. So,
he would probably acknowledge it, but it doesn't feel like it would be something that would really linger in his mind.
Yeah. So, and like I said before, I think Worf would have been fine with it. He would have gotten it.
Yeah. It's not like he was weeping over his TNG, friends when he was on DS9.
No, not at all. He was looking forward to hanging out with Raffi.
Exactly. That's what he had in his future, and he was more than happy with that.
Okay. Cam, let me ask you this. Can we rank her closest relationships aboard the Enterprise D? I would say
okay.
Like, Wesley's number one. Is that fair?
I guess so. I mean, I think of Picard as the much more compelling relationship, but I guess Wesley would be just the fact it's a mother, you know, son relationship has to be number one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have to do the headcanon in my head. Like, I know as viewers, we see more screen time between her and Jean-Luc, but I think as a matter of practicality, she has a closer relationship to Wesley than she does with Jean-Luc.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Do you think she's closer to Ogawa or to Jean-Luc?
Jean-Luc.
Okay. She's just very interested in what's going on in Ogawa's love life.
The question is more actually between Troy or Ogawa, I think.
Okay. I ultimately have to go with Troy over Ogawa, you know.
I mean, the footage weighs heavily in the Troy camp, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Now, here's the question. Data or Ogawa?
Oh, that's it. There, okay, there is an intimacy, actually. And we haven't talked about this. There's actually a real intimacy between Crusher and Data in that he is willing to tell her about the switch to turn him off. And that is something that's like the most intimate thing Data could ever express to another character. And he shares that with Crusher, who is then in charge of having to turn him off at certain points. So that's pretty big.
Did he share that because she's the chief medical officer on the ship, though?
Maybe. It's possible. Do you think he told Ogawa off screen?
Yeah. Well, he crashed that date that she had with Andrew, you know, and had to let her know as well.
Okay. I would say though, like sharing that information and then also, but then this is more about Data's relationship with Crusher versus Crusher's relationship with Data.
Yeah. Oh. I think she liked hanging out with Data, but I think she had, I think she probably spent more time having fun with Ogawa, if I'm being honest.
I think so too. And just like the personal chats they would have would show there's just more of an investment in each other's lives than, I don't know that she was like that obsessed with Data's day-to-day life.
Yeah. Okay. So I say that so far we've got like Wesley, then Jean-Luc, then Deanna, then Ogawa, then Data. Yeah. I think after that it's Riker. Yeah. I mean they got it on in the host, but I mean beyond that, I'm trying to think like beyond like say a poker, you know, game. Yep. Like how much time did those two spend together? I guess she directed him in the frame of mind, play. You know.
Yep. Yep. I would say Riker, and then probably Worf next.
Nah, I say Geordi and then Worf. Like what?
Ooh,
like
okay.
Did she and like Worf really? What did they do together?
I guess I'm thinking of more of how much time he spent with her in medical situations.
Okay. For me, do you know? Okay, actually, you know what? I was thinking about like Worf's relationship with everybody, and like I think like Worf is just such a natural outsider and loner that he doesn't seek out like close relationship. With like he does feel like this crew is kind of a family to him, but I still think like he's the least close to everybody within the crew, and that's why I put Geordi in front of him.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes sense to me, yeah. And yeah, I also just think, like, Geordi would be more invested in having an ongoing relationship with Crusher in some way versus, like, Worf, who's, you know, a little hit or miss in that avenue.
Yeah. And then, I guess, just by default, Yar at the bottom of the list.
Yes.
Or Argyle. Argyle.
Argyle as well. What about Guinan?
I can't think of any, like, important Guinan and Crusher moments. That's where I'm struggling.
They also often worked at odds with one another because you would have Guinan fulfill that sort of like guidance role towards a character that maybe Crusher would supply, or Deanna Troi as well. So it's kind of like they fulfilled a similar function on the show. Yeah.
Okay. What about Ben the Waiter?
Number one. Cross off, okay, Wesley.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Wes. Yeah. This is my new adopted son.
Wait, what about Jack Crusher in Picard Season 3? Does he rank above or below Wesley?
Well, okay, so in my head I was thinking like the Enterprise D, but with regards to that relationship, I just think it's such a closer relationship. I know the screen time doesn't add up to the same amount of minutes in the Star Trek universe, but I think that it is very clearly meant to be a much closer relationship between Jack Crusher and Beverly Crusher versus Wesley Crusher and Beverly Crusher.
It's just so weird we never had a scene of Jack Crusher and Wesley together in some way. I mean, given Will Wheaton's performance in Picard Season 2 and just the way they're kind of writing that character, it would have...
Yeah.
I don't think it would have even worked in terms of tones, putting those two characters together in Picard Season 3, but it still feels like kind of a... they really should have found a way to make that happen.
I don't know. I think we're better off that. Like,
yeah.
I just think it would have been such an awkward scene, and it would have felt almost arbitrary and just kind of wedged in there just to say that there was a scene between those two brothers.
What if it was silent? Like, it was just a moment at the very end of Season 3 where you see the group of them all together.
And it's just like a head nod, and they both put on matching sunglasses.
That's right.
And flip their collars.
And then bad to the bone kicks in, yeah.
And then they hold their arms up like they're Power Rangers and both zap off with a Traveler.
That would be amazing if at the very end it was actually Wesley recruiting Jack Crusher to become one of the Travelers, and he goes off and gets lost in the stars as well.
Yeah, he got sick of Corey immediately after Season 2 of Picard.
Yeah, that'd be actually an amazing ending to Season 3 Picard. Do you think we will ever see Beverly again?
Probably not. I think about the state of Paramount Plus and the streaming goals of this giant company, and I don't know, man. I don't think we're gonna get a flood of Star Trek content like we were from 2017 onwards. I think this is the last we've seen of Beverly Crusher, and I think they did her a solid by bringing her back for Season 3 of Picard and sending her off in a much better way than the films ever treated her.
And then did her a dirty by putting her in that very short trek with the snot planet.
Yeah, what was that about? That's the last, Cam. That is literally the last we might have heard of, Gates McFadden's voice in the Star Trek universe is the snot planet.
Well, I mean, yeah, and you know Jonathan Frakes will probably pop up in some fashion. I mean, obviously on Lower Decks, right? Maybe that's what it's going to depend on, is Beverly Crusher showing up on Lower Decks.
Well, actually, she did. She, remember, she was among the, former Starfleet officers that needed to be picked up because of the, that ship that was targeting like former Starfleet officers in Lower Decks, and like her, she didn't appear in person, but like an image of Dr. Crusher, or maybe just like her name appeared on that list of former Starfleet officers.
Okay, so if we can get Beverly a pop-in appearance on Lower Decks, that will kind of erase the sin of ending on that very short trek.
The sin of snot.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. And also leave reviews for us wherever you get your podcasts. They are much appreciated. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam, we are going to be exploring the final seasons of Star Trek. This is kind of us gearing up for the final season of Star Trek Discovery. So we kind of want to examine like how other shows have tackled this to varying degrees of success, as you and I were kind of spitballing and thinking about episodes to do next on Subspace.
I think this episode is going to be a total blast, and I look forward to it. And you can also, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vess Alcar is no match for Beverly Crusher Smith.
And you can find me at Reportin. That's R as in Rosa, comma, sub, E-P-O-R-T-O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed. Maybe it's actually baked into the character. Maybe that's Beverly's thing is ghosting people.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I never thought about it that way.